Good morning, Colorado. Here we go. Y'all ready for this? The Bell and Pollock Legal Show. Gary Bell, Brad Pollock, we're here for you. We are injury attorneys in our day lives. This radio show, though, we're here to answer your questions on any legal subject. It doesn't matter what it is. It can be real estate, landlord-tenant, wills, eviction, real estate titles, contracts. Our telephone number, 303-713-8255. That's 303-713-8255, right? Do you know what a bargain and sale deed is, a general warranty deed? Those are very important concepts, very important instruments. So we're going to talk a little bit about that in our show today. You can call us at 303-713-8255. Right here in the studio, we got the whole crew ready to go for you. Our website, championsofthepeople.com. That's championsofthepeople.com. We've got six books. We've written six books to give you the injury information that you need. One of the books is called Cowards of the Street, Hit and Run. Everything you needed to know about a hit and run accident. And you do need to know. Those are special circumstances. So you can go to our website at championsofthepeople.com. Download a free any of our books, but you can download the Hit and Run book. Or if you want a hard copy, you can call the studio right here at 303-713-8255. And we'll be glad to send you a hard copy. Or you can, at any time, just drop by our law firm and we'll give you a hard copy. Anytime. And if we have time to meet you, we will do that. 303-713-8255. What is the Electoral College? All this news about the Electoral College. So we thought we'd delve into the legality and legal aspects of the Electoral College. All this news. We got a new bill. I think now a new law. I think the governor signed it into law where it changes the, joins the compact of states. Once they get to 270 votes, then that law is going to go in effect. Probably be challenged many, many times. The Electoral College is already the subject of numerous lawsuits. You know, Brad, I don't think people realize, and it was kind of surprising to me as well. So when you're doing the research on this subject, the Electoral College, that when you vote for the president or the vice president, you go down and cast your vote. Really, legally, you're not voting for the president or the vice president. You're voting for electors of the Electoral College to cast the vote for the president and vice president.
Right. It starts with the framers of our Constitution and when they were trying to determine how you were going to elect the president and vice president. And amazingly enough, we all think, well, it's the general way and it's the way we've seen for the last century or whatever, and everybody thinks it's the same way. But there's been a lot of struggles in trying to determine how we're going to elect the president and the vice president of our country. And the Electoral College is an example of it. Some people will tell you in some history books that the Electoral College is the result of a general distrust by the framers of our Constitution of the general public, and a belief that the general public would not be educated enough or have enough knowledge and information to be able to appropriately pick the leaders of our country, and that should be left to the small group of more educated people. And I say that because back then there was a difference in the widespread education that there is now. Although now you still talk about people whether or not they have education as it relates to picking our leaders. There are others who say the Electoral College was a way to preserve the rights of the minority when you had states that had less population saying, wait a minute, if we join your union and we remain a part of your union, we will never have a say in who the president is because you have certain states that where the population is so huge and where the population on a landslide vote could elect the president, notwithstanding the fact that here's one state wanting this president and here's five states that don't want this person for president, and these five states will never have a say in who will be the president because we have to go by the popular vote.
Yeah, when you drill down to the legal aspects of this, it's absolutely fascinating. A lot of it revolves around the 12th Amendment to the United States Constitution. But Brad just said something very, very important a minute ago on the Electoral College vote process. In the beginning, if you study American history, but in the beginning, The electoral votes and the people that are going to cast the electoral votes could exercise their own independent judgment, no matter what else anybody said or no matter what the votes were. And so then the 12th Amendment changed that. And the 12th Amendment changed that whole procedure. So it wasn't just a purely exercise in independent votes because, you know, as you hear in the news, some electoral people are not going to vote for the statewide majority vote. They want to do their own thing. In the beginning, that's the way it was. And so next thing, how's it determined how many states, how states get their electoral votes? How many votes do they get? How's that determined? It's determined, right? It starts with the census to begin with the population, but it's determined by the number of senators and representatives that you have in each state, right? And we got some fascinating law in this area. So how many senators does New York have? And how many representatives do they have? That's how many electoral votes they get. How many does Colorado have? 9 senators and representatives. So they get 9 electoral votes. So then you cast your vote for the president. You go do your vote. And you're really voting for the Electoral College representatives to cast their vote for president and vice president. There's also a couple of states, Maine and Nebraska. It's just an incredibly different process. Brad, it's called the Congress district voting. So in Colorado, it's different than Maine and Nebraska. So where did all these laws come from? Maine and Nebraska, each congressional district in their state gets 1 vote. So they don't go by the popular vote in the state. So in Colorado, you get a popular vote. Candidate number X wins the popular vote. So the Electoral College people have to vote for candidate X. But in Nebraska and Maine, each congressional district casts 1 vote for whoever they want. That's Maine and Nebraska. And then there's 2 votes left over in Maine and Nebraska. And that's done by the majority vote in that state. So then the 12th Amendment changed the whole flavor of the how you cast electoral votes. So it's a big fight, and it's quite complicated. If you ever read the 12th Amendment, it's going to make your head spin. You're going to get dizzy. So you start with a number of representatives and senators in each state. So they cannot just exercise their independent judgment anymore. That was the 12th Amendment was passed in 1804.
Well, you know, you want to make your head spin. Remember the Electoral College at one time. While they were electing the president, they also elected the vice president, but they didn't vote for actually vice president. They voted for all the different persons who were running for president, and the one who got the most was the president. The one who got the second most was the vice president. What you start realizing is that there had to be a lot of compromise, and as much as people might be dug in their different political positions in their different political ways, the country came together through compromise, and the country came together through people having to figure out ways to make the popular vote or the ways to make our elections work that made everybody feel like they had a say, but at the same time allowed people to address what their different biases.
Right. And, you know, the 12th Amendment leaves it up to the states to establish their own procedures to how you select an elector and how they vote. This is incredibly fascinating law because it's coming to a head. It's coming to a head. And one of the reasons is Colorado passed a new law that says they want to go to the popular vote. Once enough states enter into this compact, once enough states agree and pass laws to go to the popular vote, and that gets to 270, then that law is going to take effect, and the president's going to be chosen by a popular vote. Do you think that law is going to be challenged? Absolutely. You can call us anytime, 303-713-8255. That's 713-8255. Gary Bell, Brad Pollack. Our website, championsofthepeople.com for you. We'll be right back. All right, here we go. Fasten your seatbelt. Gary Bell, Brad Pollack. Our law firm is Bell and Pollack. We formed our law firm in 1984 with a vision and mission to help injured victims and their families put their lives back together again, and we've done it all over the state of Colorado, and we're glad to do it for you. You can call us right now in the studio and ask us a question on any legal subject, though. We don't care. It doesn't have to be injury law. It can be any legal subject. 303-713-8255, 713-8255. And as they say in law school, here's a query for you. Ready? Get ready. Get your coffee. Get ready. Does the United States Constitution compel electors in each state to vote for their party's candidate? Does federal law compel it? What compels it? You got electors in each state. They're sitting right here in Colorado. They meet in the middle of December after the November election and they cast their votes. What compels it? It's not in the United States Constitution. Isn't that fascinating? It's not in a federal law. Isn't that fascinating? Then what the heck is it? So the 12th Amendment says each state has their own process and procedures. Listen to that statement. Wow. Each state. Oh, because Texas can change it, California can change it, Pennsylvania can change it the way they vote. And then so everybody gets upset because one electoral person says, I'm not going to vote for the popular vote. I'm not going to do that. I'm going to vote my own conscience. In the beginning, that's the way it was, right? So 27 states, this is going to surprise you, 27 states have laws on the books that require electors to vote for their party's candidate, the one that wins the popular vote. But 24 states have no such laws. So what happens? What happens in the 24 states? Somebody goes to cast their vote in the middle of December after the November election, and they say, I'm just going to do what I want to do. I'm an elector. I don't care how you voted. I'm going to do what I want to do. There's no law. There's no constitutional law. There's nothing in the federal law. There was no state requirement in those laws. So it's common practice. Boy, would that be grounds for a lawsuit? Common practice. You know, law is usually the ones that are enforced, so how fascinating is that? So it's a state's rights issue, and I don't think most of us realize how this really works. But I go back to the beginning, because in the beginning, the Electoral College and the electors could cast their own, quote, independent vote on their own independent discretion, no matter what happened in the election.
Well, you know, let's take a look at it, you know, because we know we've had five presidents. That'd be a nice little thing for people to look up today. Five presidents who were elected who did not win the popular vote. And, you know, it's not new, folks. I mean, yes, our current president did not win the popular vote. We know that. But it started back in 1824 with John Quincy Adams, Rutherford Hayes, Benjamin Harrison. So Rutherford Hayes in 1876, Benjamin Harrison in 1888, George Bush in 2000, I mean, many of us will remember that election with Al Gore, and then Donald Trump are the five presidents that I've been able to research and find that did not win the popular vote and still became president. Was that giving power to the smaller states who were able to have their electoral votes count in a way more than the population vote, the populist vote of maybe California or Texas or New York, which has bigger populations, and therefore their populations, if they're swept, can control how the vote comes out? Yes. It gave more power to the smaller states, and it flies in the face of one vote, one person. But on the other hand, like I said, our country was put together in a series of compromises, and the smaller states agreed to come together with the larger states with a series of compromises where we try to give some voice to the minority vote, to the minority position.
Right. And so now we've got this whole process going on. Now, 11 states, and Colorado, I think, just joined them. 11 states now have passed this law that says we don't want to do the Electoral College vote system anymore. We want to do the popular vote. And so what tips it over? What's the tipping point, right? The tipping point is when enough states enter into this compact that constitutes 270 electoral votes, then that's going to change the way you elect the president. But here's a mind bender for you. Are you ready? Because everybody says, well, the Electoral College vote, 200 gets 270 votes, is the president. And that's the way it's been, right? But what if I mean, we always have, sometimes in elections, we have a third-party candidate, fourth-party candidate. What if no one person got the 270 votes? What if you went through this and nobody got the 270? What the heck happens there legally? Wow, what a question. Did you know that in such a situation, the House of Representatives chooses one of the top three, the House. The Congressional House chooses one of the top three presidential electoral votes as winners as president. One of the top three, not even the top one, not even the second one. One of the top three. And the Senate, the United States Senate, chooses one of the top two people for vice president. So if you have an election and nobody gets to 270 electoral votes, wow, the U.S. House of Representatives picks somebody on the top three and the Senate picks somebody in the top two. You give us a call at 303-713-8255. We're here for you, 713-8255. Today, our show on KOA at 10 o'clock, our Champions of the People Injury Show from 10 to 11, is about concussions and traumatic brain injuries. It's a huge subject. And if, you know, if you're in an accident and you feel foggy or you lose consciousness and you go to the emergency room, you're going to learn how these insurance companies attack you. And you say, well, and a year later, 6 months later, your family says you're a different person. You have issues. You have headaches. You're moody. You get angry all the time. You have memory situations. But the insurance company says when you went to the emergency room, you had a perfect Glasgow Coma Scale test of 15. You had a perfect 15. So what's your problem? If you want to know about concussions, if you want to know about concussions and car accidents, which happen all the time, listen to our show today, Champions of the People Injury Show. And you can, if you don't get it live, you can get it on our website, championsofthepeople.com. So, Brad, let's talk a little bit more about this Electoral College situation. One person, one vote. We've always heard that. We've heard that forever. Wait a minute. One person, one vote. What does that mean? Where does that come from? And there's, you know, United States Supreme Court case on this, and it starts basically from the Equal Protection Clause of the Constitution. But let's talk about one person, one vote.
Well, that's, once again, one person does have one vote, and every person who wants to vote can vote. Now, you know, what you see time and again, challenges to who's enabled to vote or who's able to vote, who's not, whether or not more people voted or some people voted twice and whether or not they didn't. As we go through now with mail-in ballots, does a person actually vote for everybody within their household or within their group or within an organization and fill out all the mail-in ballots and therefore has more than one vote? Can a person give up their vote to another person? And, you know, our country started with the idea that each person went to the poll and voted their particular conscience and how they believed that they should vote. The framers of our Constitution and for years after that, there's been questions as to whether or not they believed in how much power that one vote should have. And that's where it becomes a question mark. And whether or not there should be anybody overseeing the ultimate decision that's made by the general population. We have to remember that when all this was being decided by the framers of our Constitution, we had a completely different educational system in this country. We had a completely different system of getting the word out and getting people to understand and know who a person was and who that person wasn't. We had a completely different way of vetting the candidates and knowing who the candidates were and weren't. Now, I say that while at the same time, even today, with all the investigations that are going on, with all the reviews that are going on, with all the conspiracy theories that are going on, whether they're right or not, this is not a political show, but we still have a situation of, does the education get out to the population? Does the population know who the person is they're dealing with? Does the population know exactly who, everything about the person they're voting on? And what does come from the attempts by different people to distort the information you know about a particular candidate? And these are all things that we have laws that work very hard and very diligent to try to make sure that when you are going to the polls, you have the honest, complete, and full information about the person you're going to be voting on and the person you're going to vote against. that still comes down to a question of whether or not we give any kind of power to minority states versus majority states, or if that's something that we don't give power to.
Right, and the one person, one vote, you know, we all say, well, we live in America, my vote counts. One person, one vote, I've always heard of that. That's great. Yeah, I like that. I like that. One person, one vote sounds fair, right? Well, where did it come from? Is it even a law? Anywhere. You can call us right now at 303-713-8255, 713-8255. Our show today, our Champions of the People Injury Show, is on concussions, traumatic brain injuries, car accidents, traumas. How does the insurance companies try to beat you? What you can do? Because concussions are real. It all came to light with the NFL settlement, with the NFL lawsuits. It all came to light. It was there for a long time, but it came to light. These things are real. They affect your life. If you want to know more today, 10 o'clock, KOA, 850 AM, Gary Bell, Brad Pollack. We'll be right back. All right, here we go. Grab your legal coffee, your legal bagel. We're going to talk to Eric from Caitlin's. Good morning, Eric. How are you?
I'm good. How are you guys doing today?
Good. What's cooking over there?
We got some new specials we're going to run by you guys. We'll start with that breakfast special. We're going to run a shrimp eggs Benedict for our special. That's a customer request. We're going to run that one. That comes on a toasted English muffin. That's two poached eggs, grilled shrimp, fresh baby spinach, hollandaise sauce right on top of that. Of course, you can get a side of hash browns on top of that if that's not enough for you there. That's a new item. That's the shrimp egg Benedict. That is the breakfast special for the rest of the week. And we're going to run beef tacos for our lunch special. We're going to run three soft shell beef tacos. That's that seasoned ground beef. We're going to serve that with shredded cheese, lettuce, tomato, guacamole, sour cream. Of course, you can get hash browns on the side of that if you want on the side of that, or you can get chips and fries. You can add something to that if you'd like. It's a pretty good-sized meal in of its own. That's the beef tacos. That is the lunch special for the rest of the week. And guys, don't forget, every week from 6 a.m. to 10 a.m., we're doing that early bird special. Every Monday through Friday, 6 a.m. to 10 a.m., you can get two eggs, two slices of bacon, or a sausage patty, or a half a slab of ham. Hash browns come automatic with that, and your choice of the toast comes with that as well. That is our early bird special. We run that every week. That's ongoing. Come down and check that out. If that's not enough to get you down, we got tons of other scratch-made products on the menu, green chili, scratch-made buttermilk pancakes, all kinds of stuff. We got cinnamon grillers on the sweet side. I know you guys have mentioned those in the past. We've got those always available all the time. So come on down to Caitlin's and check out everything else we have to offer, too.
Eric.
Yes.
Cold is coming in. It's going to be cold today and tomorrow.
It is. I thought it was going to be snow on the ground this morning, but we got lucky.
So if I come down there for just some hot soup, you got some?
Absolutely. We do soup and salad combinations. We do soup and sandwich combinations. We have tomato Florentine. We run different soups weekly. We mix those all up. We've got tomato Florentine right now, but we do a green chili chicken stew that we have on hand all the time. So that's always available. And since you brought up the weather, we also run the chili bowl. I know that's popular with some people. We've run that as a special in the past. We do our own homemade beans here. You can put that red or green chili on top of that, some shredded cheese, some sour cream on top of that. That chili bowl is out of this world. That would come in handy this weekend as well. Absolutely.
That's the one I'm coming for, the chili bowl.
You will be ready for you.
All right, buddy.
Hey, Eric, where are you located?
Guys, that is 4379 East Mississippi Avenue. Now, that's one block east of Colorado Boulevard. That is in the Glendale Shopping Center. Guys, come and check us out. You will love it, everybody of the way.
All right, thanks a lot.
Thanks, guys.
All right, the Bell and Pollack Legal Show. This is the only show of its kind. You can call us, and we're going to answer your question on any legal subject. Even though we're injury attorneys, we'll tackle any legal subject. 303-713-8255, 713-8255. And today, from 10 to 11, every Saturday, 10 to 11 on 850 AM KOA. We have the Champions of the People Injury Show. And why do we do this? We give you this information. Just tell me the name of another law firm that goes to the links to give you the information. Because Brad and I have learned over the years it's so important for you. It's so important for your family. It's so important for your future. You have to know what you're doing. And so we've written six books. We got more on the way. You have to understand what's important for you. All right. Let's talk about another thing that's important for you. A real estate transaction. Everybody at some point in time engages in a real estate transaction. And I think, from my observation, you get the title commitment done and you have the real estate done. And then you think, well, surely somebody is going to be looking at my documents. Surely somebody is going to be looking at the deeds. You know what a general warranty deed is? A special warranty deed? After acquired title? What does that mean? A bargain and sale deed? It calls in your contract for a certain kind of deed. And the new form of real estate contract for residential purchases and sales has changed. There's no longer guarantees of any kind of general warranty deed. What does that mean for you? It deals with your title. You can ask the people that follow us, the Consumer Real Estate Show. They're experts on real estate, Barry and Larry. That's the show that follows our show. You can listen to them. And I bet they know what general warranty deeds are, special warranty deeds, and bargain and sale deeds. You have to know these things. Right now, we're going to talk to Bea from Colorado Springs. Good morning, Bea.
Hey, good morning. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
The question I have is that I'll give you a little background, and I've had this accountant for 23 years, and all of a sudden he ups and sells his business without any notification, and the other guy that bought it, he called and said that, he was there and everything. So when I got there with my paperwork last year, he had put a paper in front of me, and he said, well, sign this. Well, stupid me, I didn't even ask him what it was signing, pertaining to my account. And so then I did, and then I got to thinking about it. Now, does that mean that he's going to hold me true to coming out to see him instead of changing an accountant?
Well, it depends on what that document says. Have you read it? Do you have any idea what it says, B?
No, I really don't.
Did the accountant give you a copy of it?
Well, no, he didn't give me a copy of it.
Whoa.
So I can go out and get one, hopefully.
Okay.
But
Brad's going to give you his take, but we'll be glad to help you. It doesn't sound normal. It doesn't sound right. Okay.
Right. Uh-huh.
But you probably signed a document that says you're going to stay with the CPA practice or something like that. But whatever the language of the document is controls.
I can think of a number of different things the accountant could be doing. But B, do you communicate with this accountant at all through the internet or do you?
No, I go out to see him.
Okay.
Yes, he has an office. Yeah.
Do you have email available?
Yes.
Okay. Here's what I would do. I would call up the accountant. Or call up the offices and say, I want you to send a copy of whatever it was I signed.
Oh, okay.
And tell them to send it because I don't want you. And this is a way to keep things relatively comfortable with you too. And instead of having to have a confrontational situation where you're saying, I want to see it and read it right then and having to read it if it's got fine print and having no opportunity to have a lawyer look at it, I think this is something where you want to say, okay, but send me whatever it is I signed. So I can have a copy of it. They can send it by the internet. When they do that, you'll be able to send it to us. And we'll be able to review it for you, give you an idea what it is. This could be nothing more than him saying, you understand you have a new accountant and we're going to be looking at your past tax returns and basing our future performance based on what your past tax returns are. Or it could be something where all of a sudden you're being bound to that accountant or where you're being bound to some financial terms of that with that accountant.
And here's a couple of red flags, B, for you. So when you call, you can either email the accountant or call them up, either way, and say, send me a copy of the document.
Okay.
Red flag.
Do that.
Okay, if they say to you, B, well, why do you want this? If they start to argue with you and you have resistance of any kind or nature from them, that's a red flag to me.
And if
they say to you, okay, sure, we'll send you a copy, then it's not so much a red flag. It's okay, here, you wanted a copy. If they say to you something like, well, why do you want it? Why? That's a red flag to me. That's like a freight train coming right at you, okay?
That's true.
Yeah, okay. So, and if you don't have any luck, we're going to take your number. We're going to help you. But if you don't have any luck getting the document, we can get it for you, okay?
Yeah.
Sounds great.
We'll get it for you. But let's just get it and read it. And like I said, if you get it through the internet and through an email, you can send a copy to us. We'll look at it for you.
So, B, I'm going to put you on hold. Give Kevin your information. You request the document from your CPA so we can read it, and we'll enlighten you and help you.
Okay. Thank you very, very much.
Thank you for the call, ma'am.
Uh-huh.
All right. The Bell and Pollock Legal Show, the only show of its kind, today at 10 o'clock every Saturday from 10 to 11, the one-hour-long Champions of the People Injury Show. We try to give you the information you need on a different injury subject each week. We also have other shows that air in the mountain towns and in Denver on Saturday and Sunday mornings. So you can listen to those shows. And if you miss them, if you want to see them, you can go to our website, right? championsofthepeople.com. championsofthepeople.com, and our shows are right there. Okay. we're going to talk a little bit about sexual harassment on the job, right? Sexual harassment. It can be on the job, it can be off the job. But on the job, what's the genesis of this? What's the legality of sexual harassment? What does sexual harassment mean? And so, Brad, it's been construed by the United States Supreme Court to come under Title VII as a form of discrimination.
Right. And once again, this is where, you know, our Constitution and our laws are ever-changing to meet with the needs of society. And those needs of society are only determined based on what people believe at a different time in society, at specific times. With the Me Too movement coming around and high-profile names in politics and entertainment facing allegations of sexual misconduct, the issue of sexual harassment in the workplace has received a lot of attention. Now, this is something that's received a lot of attention for years, really, but it's really heightened now. And it's not only heightened over whether or not we have laws that protect people in the workplace, but do we have laws that protect people or address what might have been past transgressions or past actions? Is it right that we pass a new law that holds a person responsible for prior conduct? And when do we, and how do we address that? And what do we do? Obviously, there had to be a place within our Constitution, and we had to try and find some places within our Constitution where we found that sexual harassment was inappropriate, was improper. Once again, the framers of our Constitution really, in a brilliant way, put together a Constitution that allowed for this change in society. And I call it a change in society because we all know that sexual harassment and what constitutes sexual harassment and what laws protect you against sexual harassment have had to evolve since the founding of our country. And as workforces and as places have, and as employment has changed throughout our country.
It's happened, it's still happening. And so sexual harassment can come in different forms on the job. Can you do anything about it? Of course you can. You can call us right here at the studio at 303-713-8255, 713-8255. We're here for you. Our Champions of the People Injury Show today at 10 o'clock on 850 KOA, 850 AM. We'll be right back. Good morning. Fasten your seatbelt. Here we go. This injury law firm, Bell & Pollock, is here for you for any legal subject. 303-713-8255. We'll answer your question. 303-713-8255. I want to go back just a minute to this Electoral College voting issue. We covered that at the first half of the show. So let's just go back to the most recent election and the one in 2008. Just to show you, this is an eye-opener. We told you earlier in the show that Nebraska and Maine had a different procedure because under the 12th Amendment, the states can adopt their own procedures. So in 2008, Nebraska, what do you think they did? Nebraska gave four of its Electoral College votes to John McCain, four. But they changed one. Barack Obama got one electoral vote from Nebraska's second congressional district. So that state didn't have all their Electoral College votes going to one candidate. Four went to John McCain. One by congressional districts went to Barack Obama. Okay, let's take Maine in the most recent election. Maine gave three of its electoral votes to Hillary Clinton, three. But Don Trump won a single electoral vote in Maine's second congressional district. So those two states have a different process and a different procedure. And that's how the votes were cast. So, all right, if you've been in a car accident or you got somebody in your family that's had a concussion and a trauma, this is very important because you've got to know what the symptoms are. What if they have headaches? What if they have memory change? The insurance company says it's no big deal. What if they're non-energetic? They have flashbacks. That's a big one. Memory loss, anxiety, fear, mood swings, anger. Suddenly, this person's whole personality has changed, maybe a little bit, maybe a lot, maybe somewhere in between. what do you do about it? You know, when you talk about vision problems or midline shift, that's a big issue with concussions, a big one. Go to our show today at 10 o'clock on KOA, and we're going to talk about concussions. What about executive functions? A different part of the brain, does that relate to the right parietal side of the brain, the left parietal, the frontal lobe, the hippocampus, the thalamic region? Wow. You have to know these things to win these cases, but you have to know the details, and you can learn them today from 10 to 11 on our Champions of the People injury show. 10 to 11 every Saturday. So back to sexual harassment a second. There's basically two kinds. It's a quid pro quo. I mean, boss demands a sexual favor for a promotion, or no, I'm not going to promote you. I'm not going to do anything, or I'm going to fire you, or I'm going to reduce your salary, or I'm going to send you off to the front line. I'm going to do this or that. That's a quid pro quo, something for something, in exchange for sex. That's a sexual harassment claim. But the more difficult one, Brad, is the hostile work environment sexually. And there are certain lines that people can't cross and employers can't cross. And then how does a company be held responsible, Brad? Well, maybe it's employee X over there in the warehouse or on the fifth floor that's harassing somebody. And how is the company responsible for that ultimately?
Well, the procedure is it can be very complicated in how to deal with something like that. The first thing you want to do is you want to find out if the company has any stated policies or procedures, or if they have any stated persons to whom you can report the sexual harassment. Obviously, we have situations where the person you have to report the sexual harassment to is the very person who is carrying out the sexual harassment. And therefore, there has to be an alternate method or an alternate system by which you can report sexual harassment. The question you have every time is whether or not the events or what is occurring rises to the level of sexual harassment, and how it's going to get investigated, and whether or not it's going to put you in a position where you lose your job as a result of the sexual harassment, or where you find yourself even having more problems because there's not an effective way to address it. Like I said, the first thing that has to be done is that you have to find out what the company's policies and procedures are for alleged sexual harassment, to what extent your job is protected and what is not protected, and how it's going to end out being investigated if, in fact, you bring this to the attention of the people in positions of power within the company.
Right. And, you know, we're going to have a Champions of the People injury show coming up in the next few weeks on sexual harassment, because it's very important for you to know. Cosmopolitan Magazine took a survey of 2,235 women, and approximately one-third of the women between the ages of 18 and 34 have been sexually harassed at work or at some point during their careers. What do you do about it? What are the procedural steps you take? Can you do anything about it? Well, the first thing that you do, ladies, and this can also apply to men, but the first thing you do is report it to the HR department. They have to have notice. They have to have knowledge. So how do you hold the company responsible? Did they know about this person? Did they take disciplinary action? So you must report it to HR. That's just the beginning. That's step number one. Then, Brad, under the 14th Amendment, since it's an EEOC thing, you have to file a complaint with the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission. And there's different requirements depending on the time. There's a 300-day limit, and there's another time limit, but you have to report it. So you can't just automatically go off willy-nilly to court. You have to do it to the HR department. You have to report it and make a claim and see what the EEOC does.
Well, yeah, and understand that EEOC complaint might have to be filed within 180 days of the date you believe you were discriminated against, and that discrimination can be more than just sexual harassment. It can be for any reason. So you've got to make sure that you're making your complaints to the proper places at the proper time. That's a lot different than the Me Too movement, where we have people coming in and saying, hey, I was sexually harassed years ago, versus people who are actually on the front line, the firing line right now, in the job, and they believe they're being harassed for one reason or another. Discriminated against. It can be sexual discrimination. It can be any kind of discrimination that they have to be able to address through appropriate governmental agencies. Like I said, a lot of times the EEOC, and they're going to look and they're going to say, have you started within your company? Do you have a procedure to express what you believe is the discrimination that's occurring within the company? Now, this isn't something where you don't like the boss or the boss doesn't like you, or you don't like people in positions of power, and you think and you don't like the rules and regulations. This isn't something where you think necessarily the rules are being applied differently to you. It's got to be a reason. It's got to be a question of whether it's a discriminatory reason. And this is something that needs to be, I think, reviewed quite often with the different people in power and with your own coworkers to find out why a particular person is being signaled out or is not getting what you consider to be fair treatment.
So, you know, let's break it down to its components. Number one, you have a quid pro quo, a sexual favor demanded or implicitly required or requested in exchange for something, a salary, a promotion, or if you don't do it, a demotion or being fired. So that's a quid pro quo. That's one. The other one is a hostile work environment with you in the middle of the environment. It can come in a variety of different ways. It can come from sexual innuendo, speech, talk, verbal, physical actions. So there's a hostile work environment that involves sexual discrimination. So first of all, you go to the HR, you report it. Second of all, you report it to the EEOC, right? And you got a choice of the state or the federal, but usually the federal EEOC. Once you do that, they start an investigation. Then eventually they give you a right to sue letter. So that's an administrative remedy. You have to exhaust your administrative remedies first. And Bell and Pollock is going to be doing a sexual harassment show coming up on the Champions of the People injury show. But today, as you know, it's going to be about concussions, 10 to 11 on 850 AM KOA. Concussions, how they change people's lives. Are they real? Yes. How do insurance companies treat them? What do you need to do? How do you prove this claim? Is there any testing? What procedures do you follow? Listen to our show today at 10 o'clock. As always, go to our website, championsofthepeople.com. We are there for you with the information because we are your champions of the people. See you next week.